please click the subscribe button and the notification icon. It will help us a lot.
Hi guys, this is Rodrigo from Level Up, and today I got a friend of mine here that I'm very happy to introduce you. His name is Spencer McMurtry, and this guy is a complete boss. He started his first business when he was 15. I met him when we joined together entrepreneurship mastermind online. That was one of these things that you thought that may be a scam, but luckily it wasn't. And the thing is that when I met him, he was working on a company called Infinite Graphics. Actually, I have a decal on my laptop that was made by him. And he was probably the largest graphic providers in his local area. Then he built another company called Striking Wraps, and pretty much grew it to be the largest provider of vehicle wraps for Cooligan Water franchise. And then he later sold that business and started consulting with Signature Graphics, which is a Fortune 500 organization, marketing and systems, and pretty much resulting in them expanding into new markets. And he became an instructor into this mastermind that I talked to you about. It was called the Secret Society Mastermind by Timothy Marks. And he has been mentoring hundreds of people to scale their businesses, including myself. I have to admit that he has helped me a lot with good advice, and we have even group calls. There are some moments where we put together some groups and we start taking challenges and pretty much putting like punishments if we don't accomplish this challenge. So I'm very happy to have him here. So without further ado, welcome Spencer.
Rodrigo, thank you, my man. It's so good to be here. Seems like just yesterday we were meeting in person. I remember when we were in Bulgaria, and gosh, what a time that was, man. It's so good to get to catch up with you, and yeah, looking forward to this podcast.
Yeah, definitely. Something that struck me quite weird, because I think we all have like the image that we give ourselves about on the internet, and you had like a very serious image. And when I met you, it was like the complete opposite. Like, you are full of energy. I remember that everybody was making fun of you because they say that when you woke up, like, you jump directly out of bed and say like, yes. and we had like a very good time over there.
Yes, we had a few drinks, I remember.
Yes. But coming back to the interview, can you tell us a little bit more about your history? How did you get started? Pretty much what got you into business and all that?
Yeah, definitely. Well, I mean, it started out when I was about 15 years old, actually. And I was at a festival. And there was this guy, was like he had this tent. It was a 10 by 10 tent, like a canopy. And inside this canopy, he had this huge line of cute girls that were like lined up. And then I saw he was driving this fancy sports car. And I was like, like, I think that's what I want to do. And what he was doing was he was selling airbrush tattoos. So he was doing these temporary tattoos. They put a stencil on the skin and they would brush it. And I was like, that's what I want to do. And so that's kind of, I think, when the entrepreneur bug hit me and I started saving money. And the next year I actually started doing the same business, which is doing the airbrush tattoos at various festivals. And yeah, that was where it kind of started. And then from there, I started a sign company. And when I finished high school, it was like, I had the option. Was I going to go to university, or was I going to keep running my business? And I was already making money, and I had a couple of companies before I even finished high school. And so I decided, well, I think I felt it was honestly more comfortable for me. I really didn't like high school so much. High school just didn't really, it was really difficult for me, to tell you the truth. And it was easier for me to run my company. So I was like, okay, I'm just going to keep doing this. And I kept building that up. And That's actually, once I had built that company up, I actually ended up joining this mastermind group, which is the same group that Rodrigo was talking about. And luckily enough, I had actually had like so much experience because I had ran other companies before. I was promoted to be an instructor in this group, and I was able to mentor hundreds of entrepreneurs. And Rodrigo was one of those entrepreneurs. And that's like a quick, in a nutshell, kind of my journey is to how we met. And now I'm still continuing to mentoring. And it's a fun journey. I think it's really, really, really great when we can have the opportunity to give back. We can both learn and be to a place where we can get back. I really think that's where happiness comes from.
Yeah, definitely. And I remember as well that everybody was a bit surprised in the beginning because you were one of the first that was getting amazing results. I think that was the first time that I reached to you to see what you were doing in comparison to us. And then I realized that, oh yeah, he already had a business, so he has this insane advantage over us. He already has experience, and I was completely lost back then. I didn't have any business experience at all, but as well, something that struck me about is that when you did this transition, when you started doing bacon wraps, you told me that you started like using this knowledge that we all had learned to try to see what was giving you the most money, and apparently doing vehicle wraps was the thing that was giving you the most. So you decided to go full in onto that. You decided to sell all the other parts of the previous business, and this is, I think, something that differentiates you from many other business owners, because at least so far I don't have experience selling a business that I have created, and I don't know many people who have actually experienced selling businesses that they have created to others. I do know that there are some people who pretty much what they do is to start a business, grow it, and then sell it, and that's their business models, to keep selling businesses. So how was this your first experience selling a business, or did you have some previous experience towards that?
Yeah, it's what happened was the business that I started, Infinite Graphics. This is the company I started when I finished high school. I was already doing this business in my parents' basement, and the option was, okay, I can continue running this company, Infinite Graphics, or I can go to university. And like I said, like it's such a challenging time in school. It was easier for me. It was like, I'm already making money. Like I was doing quite well. I mean, I was, you know, 18-year-old kid driving a BMW M3. Like it's interesting. It was interesting lifestyle for me because, like I said, I started my business so young that I've always just kind of had money from that. And so I decided I was not going to go to university. And what I did was I just continued running my graphics company. But what the thing was is I grew up in a very small town. And from joining this mastermind group, I was able to do my first overseas trip. And I remember it was actually in Mykonos, Greece. And that's when my first time actually leaving the country. And it's interesting, so I'm from a little town in Nebraska, and none of my family have actually even left the country. So my parents, my two sisters, they've never even left the United States. And for growing up in this small type of environment, you know, you hear people joke about people in the United States not leaving the country. Well, it's kind of true. Depending on where you're from, if you're in a rural area, you know, I know you, Rodrigo, in El Salvador there. I guess I'd like to get your insights as far as probably not very many people get the opportunity to leave the country. Is that?
Yeah, that happens a lot. And this, United States, I can understand at some point because it's a huge country. Like if you were born right in the middle, and if you're poor and if you don't have access to all this knowledge, let's say, that can help you out to get out of there, it's going to be really hard. And for example, one of the artists that I interview in my creativity podcast, she's one of these places, like in the middle of the mountains kind of things. When she started like trying to learn graphic design, nobody in her city knew that graphic design existed. For for everybody in her city, everybody thought she was crazy because she was trying to get into arts. Because in their city, nobody did anything like that. They were all jobs about cutting wood, pretty much fishing, very rustical things. And thanks to the internet, she was able to get a lot of opportunities, and she's going into events in Los Angeles and things like that. But when she talked to me about that experience, it's like, well, yes, like, this is a huge country. It's not like you can go, let's say, I know that there are people that they don't even know the beach because it's so far away. My country is like very small. And if you went into car from one point to another, you probably will be able to go through it in about 3 to 4 hours. But even so, there are people who have not gone, let's say, into our neighbor countries. I know people who have never even traveled to Guatemala or Honduras, even though it's just a 2-hour ride in a bus. So, wow. And for example, I never left the country until I was to Bulgaria. That was my first time leaving the country. And it was, for me, was kind of a little bit crazy because I never even went to Guatemala. No, yeah. I remember now. I have went to Honduras once in the bus. It was a very hard experience for my ass because the road was really rough. But then from making that jump, like 3-hour trip in a bus to Bulgaria on the other side of the world and going to Colombia and then to Madrid and then to Bulgaria, that was kind of hard on the mind as well, because after 13 hours of flights, I was like, get me off this plane, get me off this plane. So yeah, I think that that is a very incredible experience. I also have a family who have never traveled to Europe or anything like that. So everybody was like kind of surprised that I was going to the other side of the world.
It's interesting. I think that that was probably the biggest catalyst. And you know, you asked me about selling the company, but you know, when I left the country and I saw what it was like, it was just a whole, like, it was such a shift in my brain. I mean, it was so different. You know, I grew up in a town of 1,000 people. I mean, when I finished high school, I moved up to the big city, which was 20,000 people. And it's so small. And when I left and I saw like all of these different things, and I was like, whoa, like, there's a whole new world. And it really just really inspired me and changed my life. I mean, they say you become who you surround yourself with. And that's exactly like me. I guess I'd be curious what kind of experience that was for you as well, Rodrigo. Like you said, it really did. You just said they really just changes the way you think about things when you're able to experience different cultures.
It did. Like that experience back, like just to make a note here for those who are listening to us, that trip to Bulgaria wasn't just all fun, although it was all fun, but it was also half business. Mentorships, talking to all the other guys, seeing what we were doing and comparing business models and all these things. So it was a huge learning experience combined with a huge drinking experience as well. But the thing is that it also created a catalyst for me, because I think my mind was so small when I took that trip. And it was like my mind was this base of glass that was completely shattered by the expansion of what I experienced there. Because I came from this country that a good salary is $700 a month. And that's what, and if you get that kind of salary, like everybody is surprised and happy for you. And if you get $1,000 a month, like you're a god. The people that I met over here that made the most money on a job, they were making about $2,000, but they barely had any life. But at the same time, I remember there was this case of this guy who was kind of shocked me because it was a sad tale. This guy was earning about $2,500 a month, and everybody was like, they had him on a very high place because he had that kind of salary in this country. But the thing is that if you saw his personal life, like, he barely was in his house, to the point that his wife started cheating with a guy, and he was so scared to face that up that he buried himself into more work, so that he will be working so much that his wife could cheat on him, and they will have enough time so that when he arrived home, the other guy will have already left, so he didn't have to deal with that. And for me, that was like really, really sad to see. And it was kind of shocking. And I thought, like, and this was years before I entered entrepreneurship or even thought that was an option. But I remember seeing that and thinking, like, I do not want that for my life. Like, the sad part is that I didn't knew many more people who were making more than $2,000 a month, and that who didn't also have these kind of problems. So that was kind of a bit of frustration for me, but that was also setting some mental barriers. And after Bulgaria and seeing what was possible, talking to Spencer, to other friends as well who were making a lot of money. And I remember talking to another friend of ours, who his name is Chris, and he showed me a website that he had made for a client that he had sold for $10,000. And my first thought was like, I could have made a much better website than this on design level. And I am selling them for $500. What the fuck am I doing? And then the other people who were making like $100,000 a month. And now for me, that's like, if I met somebody like that, like, oh, that, yeah, that's normal. But back then it was like, wow, is this even possible? Like, how can I do that? But when I came back, my mind was so blown that's when this podcast started, and it started by interviewing one of the three biggest guys in the animation industry. And I remember being kind of shocked by that, but also I could see that it was highly, highly, highly probable that the reason that had happened was because I was in this event, and that had expanded my horizons. And then again, like, meeting all you guys, people even now tell me why I don't want to work with clients here. And for example, right now I have a client who is acting a little bit as a creative diva, trying to control, micromanage all the creative elements of a video that we're making. But this is a $15,000 project. And that is very different when somebody starts behaving like a creative diva, trying to micromanage every tiny detail for a $500 project. Like, yeah, it's not worth it. So, on your experience on selling these businesses, what is something that you told me is that everything, on the one end, has to be automated, but that all the processes have to be documented to the last very detail, so that if you give this instruction towards another person who has never done this process before, he can follow these instructions and do the exact same thing. And this is something that I don't see many business owners doing as well, including myself. I should be doing it more, but I have done it kind of half-assed, but I should be doing a better job for it. So. And pretty much you can deliver this as a business manual to the new owner, so he can start running it and everything is working fine. So how did you came into this experience?
Yeah. Well, what I realized was when I got back from that trip in Greece, I was like, I don't want to be here in this small town anymore. You know, I experienced the other world, and I was like, I want out of here. And so I really focused on being able to step away from the business. And that's exactly what you said. I mean, my company is called The Systems Method, and it's really about systemizing your business. It's about scaling your business, so putting systems in place so you can scale. And the way my brain is, like, I'm very good at building systems. Like, I'm very good at detail. And I believe us as entrepreneurs, we all have our own strengths. But one of my strengths is definitely building things. I love creating, this was like marketing campaigns, like intricate systems, automation systems. So that's basically what I focused on doing. I focused on automating that company. And so I actually started outsourcing to the Philippines. So from having, because the company's in the United States, in Nebraska, so I did have a physical designer. He actually quit one day, and I was freaking out. I wasn't sure what I was going to do. And he ended up leaving, so I had to hire somebody. I couldn't find anybody, and then I realized I could do it in the Philippines, and that kind of began the journey of really systemizing the company. I was able to step away from it by, again, yeah, building an operations manual, like writing really detailed procedures, and I hired people that would run things for me, so I could really wasn't involved in the business. And what ended up happening was I had a key staff member that decided to resign, and I was actually living in another area. I had moved to Colorado at that time, and so I wasn't even in the same state as my business. And so I was like, well, I really don't want to. I had so much just negativity. I don't know, for lack of a better word, I just didn't have a good energy about that small town. So I basically decided I was going to sell the business, and that became kind of my mission. And yeah, it was easy to sell, because to the aspect of I had already systemized everything, that it was easy for someone to step in and really take over what I had already built. And so, again, rather than, you know, training somebody new, I just trained, you know, the new owners to kind of take over things. And that's what I say. I mean, when it comes to selling a business, it really is. It really comes down to having something that will run without you. It's hard to sell a business that won't run without you. So if you are planning to sell your company, or you really want to continue to grow, it really is, it's so important that you have to have systems. I mean, there's no other way around it. And that's really kind of how the process started. And as I saw, I was very strategic about it. Like, I was like, okay, how can I leverage what I've already built for a new company? And so I was looking at my data, like we think we were talking about this earlier. I was looking at, which is what I do with my clients. We look at your, so if you have a business, go through it and look at all of your past customers and see which ones are giving you the most revenue. And I went through and I did all of this, and I realized that the customers that were giving the most money were franchises. So they were people that had more than one location. And I realized that they were buying vehicle wraps, which is what was like a high ticket item. And so with that data, I decided that I was going to just sell that company and build a new company that just did vehicle wraps for franchises. And that became the birth of another company that I built called Striking Wraps. And so I took everything I learned from Infinite Graphics, and I basically just took the best products and the best customers, and I repackaged that into a company called Striking Wraps. And it was amazing, because the company was completely virtual. When I had Infinite Graphics, it was like I had physical employees, and I had an office, and I had a garage, and it was kind of a headache. And this new company was like, I don't want to do that. I want to travel the world. I want to have this freedom. I've been living this like nomad lifestyle for the last 5 years now. I'm actually in Jakarta, Indonesia right now. And so that's why I built that company, to be completely virtual. So I already had the designers in the Philippines, and I continued to hire more people in the Philippines to help with production. And I developed some really cool marketing campaigns, and it worked quite well. And so we became the large provider of graphics for this company called Colgan Water. They have over, I believe, 600 locations. It's been a few years, but they have quite a few locations. And maybe for the viewers, I'll share the marketing that we use. So I think it might be beneficial for you. Is we found out that the franchises always wanted to know what everyone else was doing. So they'd be like, oh, what is the franchise here in this city doing? Or what is this franchise doing? And they were always like comparing each other. And so using that to, you know, my advantage, being a marketer, I was like, okay, how can I, you know, use this? And so what I did, I built what I called the Coligan Water Vehicle Wrap Guide. And it was like this PDF document that gave them a guide. And it was like, see what the other Coligan dealers are doing with their vehicle wraps. And so everyone was like, oh, I want to know what Jim is doing down the street or what Billy's doing, you know, in the next state. And so people would basically, I would send postcards and I would do direct mail campaigns. And that's actually how we did it. It was funny because now we do everything online. You know, so I'm focused now online, but that's how I did it back then, was with postcards. And then that would get them into the funnel, and then they would download this guide, and then we'd follow up with them. And then we'd hook them into being a design, or we'd hook them into being a customer by doing a design deposit. And that's kind of how the birth of the second company happened. I feel like I'm kind of bouncing around a bit here, but that's how it kind of evolved into the other company. Like, it wasn't like I didn't want to go back to that small town, but I didn't want to lose what I'd already worked so hard building. So I was able to leverage that, which is something to think about if you're going to sell your companies. How can you leverage what you've already built or what you've learned and maybe repurpose it into a new company? Because I already had so much credibility in that space. My other company, it was very easy. It was very easy to become a large provider for that franchise when I just focused on it.
And, well, first of all, this is something crazy because for those who don't know, vehicle wraps is like the designs, like huge decals of the designs that you put into the vehicles for corporations. So when you see, let's say, a minivan or a pickup that has all the corporate design on them, that's pretty much what he did. And what's funny here is that many people will think that this is the kind of business that you will not be able to put like completely online, because it's a physical business. Somebody has to be pasting all these designs into these vehicles. So how do you work that out? Because again, as you say, it's completely virtual. Yeah. You have been traveling through the world so far, making a lot of money, and yet you have this business that is mainly physical, that has to, like, you can do the designs virtually and all that, but there has to be somebody that goes to the vehicles and start pasting all these decals over there. So how did you work that out?
Yeah, well, again, it comes down to my love for just detail. Like, I love, you know, creating systems. And so I got really good at building systems to systemize the whole process. And a vehicle wrap is very complicated. It's a very complicated business to try to do virtually. It really is. And so I got really good at systemizing that whole process. And the way it worked was basically, again, we had this marketing campaign, so we get the leads coming in. And then I figured out this ninja way to sell them as a customer. We would basically say, we just need $100 design deposit. The vehicle wraps cost around $3,000 it cost around $3,000. So it's a pretty high ticket sale. And so to get them as a customer, we would say, we just need $100 deposit to get started. And then once we got the deposit, then we would start on the design, and that's how we'd hook them as a customer. Once the design was done, that was there was a project manager in the United States. So I did have one project manager in the United States who would be the main contact with the clients. And then they would just relay the information to a team in the Philippines who would do the design work. Once the design work was done, that's when things would get really, detailed, you might say. So basically, we had this thing called it was called a production draft, and it was a special type of proof that I developed where we would give it to the customer. Again, the team in the Philippines would build this. It was a big document that we would send to the customer, and they would go and double check everything. They would check the measurements. We'd give them measurements. We'd give them examples, and they would look everything over and make sure it looked correct. Because when you're doing a vehicle wrap, if the measurements aren't just right, the phone number that's supposed to be on the door seam is going to be going through the door handle. And so it has to be just right. And so that's how we developed this document. Then once the customer would approve that document, then we would take and send that back to the team in the Philippines. And then again, I'd built procedures for them so they knew how to take this document and then get everything ready to print. So you got to take it from like the three-dimensional and then get it like two-dimensional so it could print. And that was a whole process in itself. You got an extra bleed on the edges. And then once it's already to print, then they would have to special nest it, which is like basically these big printers, they're like 5 foot wide, would print these graphics. So then they had to get everything set up just right for the printers. And then it would get printed. And then we had a process of actually vetting contract installers. So we would partner with actual who would install it was these contractors. And there was like this huge network, and we developed again procedures for that as well, where people would just research. My team would just research, say the vehicle was sold in Chicago. They would just research Chicago for an installer, and we would have this process where we'd get bids, and they would send out all these estimates. And it was quite elaborate. It was fun because it allowed me to do what I love the most, which is, you know, building systems and making things very detailed. So that's basically how we did the whole process. Was it was just a lot of error checking, a lot of quality controls, a lot of procedures. The projects were very time intensive. You know, there was a lot of time involved with the team doing them to make sure things were correct.
However, with the right procedures, pretty much you were able to keep traveling the world and not being able to worry a lot about that as well.
there's this funny story I think I can share on a story. I was living in Thailand at the time, and I remember we had just expanded to a new franchise. So we did really well with Colgan Water, so we decided to take on a new franchise called Servpro. And I did my same technique and everything, and there, you know, with the marketing campaign, and you know, worked. Like, this is great, you know. And this is what I help my clients do now, is like figure out something that works and then scale it. So we figured out what worked and we scaled it to a new location. Had all these customers come on, we had all these deposits, and we had all this going on, and I'm here in Thailand where the time zone is 12 hours different, and I have my assistant, so we didn't actually have an office. Everything was virtual, but I had a mailbox. So it looked like we had an office, but it was really just a mailbox. And the assistant like checked the mail, and she's like, hey, I got this packet here. It looks kind of important. And it was like this big, thick packet. She's like, I was like, okay, well, scan it to me. And she's like, started scanning it to me. And I look at it, and it's this cease and desist letter from the franchise. And I'm like, oh, shoot. Like, I was freaking out, and it was 12 because I had all of these deposits, and they were saying you can't do anything, like you got to stop, like refund our money. And it's like, and it turns out they didn't like me putting together a guide of these designs, because they said that I had to be an approved vendor before I could sell to their franchisees. There was like, they had like this vendor approval process, and I kind of just short stepped that whole process, and so I wasn't sure what I was gonna do. And I was like, I couldn't sleep, and the time zones were all backwards, and it was a very stressful time. And I remember I came up with this idea to basically have all of the customers that gave me money. Like, I had over, it was like six, it was at least six customers we were working with at the time. And I had told them to contact the same lady in corporate and complain to her that they wanted me to be an approved vendor. Because they told me when I applied to be an approved vendor, they said there was this whole process, and like they basically just gave me the runaround. They were like, no, like, but then when I had all of these customers complain to corporate, the same exact same lady, they called her, then the next, like within a week, I was approved to be a corporate vendor for them. And then we were able to move forward. And when I sold the company to this organization called Signature Graphics, this large corporation, and they were trying to be an approved vendor for Servpro for 3 years, and I made it happen in 1 week by, you know, getting all the customers first. And that's kind of a joke, like do something first and then ask for permission later. And it was very interesting, because when I sold the company to them, it was very valuable that I had that contract. And that's kind of how I went about getting it.
That is nice. I think that is one of these kind of thinking out of the box kind of things.
I didn't think I was breaking the rules. Like, I literally thought I was doing, because we actually talked to other, we did projects for them, and the franchise was like, oh, it's fine, it's fine, it's fine. Everybody said it was cool. Like, it was cool. And then I'm like, oh no, like I had no idea. I didn't know anything about it. But that's, how we circumvented. There's always problems. It's always problems. You know, it's like, how can you be creative and solve your problems and have fun, you know, in the process?
Yeah, definitely. And now you are building this company called Assistant Methods, trying to teach all these lessons of automation, of documenting. Like, for example, my case, automation, I already have it. It's the documentation of the automation that I don't have. Because if I wanted to sell this business system to another person, then I will have to create all the manuals of why I have built these systems. Although, for the most of it, I don't think I don't do something as difficult as you did, as complex as you did, because our animation, you can pretty much understand our process by watching the steps we have in Basecamp, and that's it, right? So there is not much need for a manual, let's say. But now that you're using this experience, you have had to deal with highly complex systems with a lot of variables, and you have been able to automate those that I don't think there's many people who can actually automate this kind of complex processes, as you have said. And now that you're trying to teach that to the public, what is your ideal client with the system methods? What are you trying to achieve there?
Yeah, I primarily work with smaller business owners. So people that are maybe, say, one employee up to, say, 10 employees is the type of clients that I really help. And what I find is those smaller companies is the owners are typically doing everything in the business. And so I love it because I get to help the owners really step away from the company and then actually provide them with the tools and the systems in their company so they can see the metrics, they can see the numbers, they can know what's going on, and then they can start to make decisions based on that actual data rather than based on emotions. So it's really fun because I work with people that already have a business, you know, a smaller company, and I help them just make it a lot bigger. Is really my ideal client. So anyone who is looking to scale who's got less than 10 employees, we have like a mastermind group you can join. We also check out one-on-one clients. So there's a couple ways that you could work with me.
Yeah, I might actually join with you because I have been discovering that, as you say, everybody has their strengths and weakness. I think I have discovered that my strength is automating production process, but now that I'm trying to automate the sales process, that's I am definitely lacking there. and this is a kind of something that we learn in this group of this mastermind that we join, is that there every business is like three subsystems, which is sales, client acquisition, production, and customer support, pretty much. And if you can automate these three subsystems, then you have a business. And I think I have been able to do a pretty good job automating production process and even integrated it with the customer support right there in the production. So there is no need for customer support, because everything is so clear, everything is so defined step by step, so there's no need for let's say, a whole different department of customer support, although I do understand that this is not possible for all businesses, but the sales automation process, like it's been the last 2 years I've been trying to automate that, and I've been failing a lot. So I probably might join the system methods as well. Something that I wanted to discuss with you, I think, because even though we come on a little different background, there is also similarities. You have been working with high-ticket clients so far. It took me a while for me to kind of make that jump because I have some mental barriers, but now I am doing this as well. I'm starting to close sales for more than $10,000. And what do you think is the most common problems that you see in entrepreneurs when it comes to mental barriers to be able to do more?
Well, I'm glad you brought that up, Rodrigo, and with the sales as well, because I was going over the questionnaire to prepare for this interview, and one of the questions was, you know, what would what's one thing you would want to teach, I guess, a younger version of yourself? And I think, you know, related to sales and marketing, one thing that I would say with that is you need to, like, what we do for our clients as well is you have to sell what the market wants. So we can have this great idea for how we want to build this thing, but when it comes to automating selling, it becomes a lot easier to automate something that people want. And that comes down to communication. And with my clients, what we found out was when you can get the right message to market match. So when you've got the right targeting and the right messaging, people are just interested. And with where we live today, especially with Facebook, for very little money, for $10 a day, you can start running tests and making sure that you have the right message to market match for what someone is interested in. So you could, like, for example, you know, you could think that maybe somebody really wants to buy, I'll try to find a good example here. Maybe somebody really wants to buy a car, and you advertise like buy this car, and you find, okay, it costs me, you know, $100 to get one lead. Maybe it's a lead or sell, you know, to get one lead for to buy a car. But then you try another test and you say, okay, it's not this. You find out that, oh, my customers buying this are males that are in their 50s that are recently divorced, right? You look at your data and maybe you found this out, right? And so then you try a message that says, okay, you change your ad and say, and buy this car, it says, find out how you can meet, you know, how you can make new friends or something, or build new relationships, and you have that tied to this car. And so pretty soon you start, you know, advertising that you can meet more people and be more fulfilled and, you know, whatever needs this person's wanting that way. And then the product that solves that is your car, but you're not actually advertising the car. You're advertising, you know, this thing that they want. And then pretty soon, instead of your lead cost being $100 per lead, it goes down to $5 or $10 per lead. And once you figure that out, like once you figure out that message to market match, you can get leads for so cheap. And once you figure out how to get those leads of your ideal customers, then you can figure out how to convert those leads from, you know, from whatever the PDF or whatever they're downloading or whatever lead that is to a paying customer. It's a whole nother process. But that's what I would say is something that I would have taught myself a long time ago is test your ideas, test your messaging to the market. Don't just, because if you spend all this time building a website, building all this effort into the stuff, but you've never tested it, it could be an uphill battle. But if you can test it and you get it just right, you get that messaging just right, then you're going to know, and it's going to convert. Like, it's going to convert over and over and over again. And that would be the quickest lesson I would learn, because once you get it working, I mean, for my clients, like literally every single day, and for myself, it's just more leads, and they just come in. I mean, and it's crazy. One of my clients, we built the system in Denver, and it was a lead generation system. And we took this and then we expanded it into California, and exact same thing. All we did was change the targeting from Colorado to California, and it's working, and leads are coming in. And then we're like, well, let's bump it up. And we boomed it into four new locations. So there's a six total. And so we did it again, the exact same thing for four new, and we've got so many leads coming in now. They honestly can't, like, it's a little bit overwhelming. So it's what I'm saying is, once you get that right message to market match, it's game over. I mean, that's really at least been what I would say to myself if I was starting first. Like, Spencer, like, if you're starting a business again and you're having a hard time selling your product, it could be because your messaging is not matching the market. And the fastest way to test that is with, in my opinion, Facebook ads. And that's the way I do it for my clients, is what I would say to my younger self. As far as mental barriers, you asked about mental barriers. Yeah. You know, I think it comes to do, I mean, really, I think it is a lot of it too, really, honestly, is mental barriers. And I think it has a lot to do with who you surround yourself with. You know, being a part of a supportive community, a supportive environment, you have to be really careful. Because the influences around you will affect you a lot. And I joke that being an entrepreneur is like putting a magnifying glass on your faults. And I really believe that is. It's probably one of the hardest things you could possibly do is be an entrepreneur, because there's so many different things you have to do. And if there's any one area that you maybe have challenges with, maybe you're insecure here, or you know, this maybe trauma from your childhood happened here or something, like that's going to come out in your business. You dang well better believe it's going to come out. So it can be very difficult. But if you can build that supportive group, and again, figure out what your strengths are, figure out what you're good at, and then you can build a team around other people. Because some people love to be on the phone. Some people love to cold call. Some people love to do this stuff. And it's like, how could they love to do that? I absolutely hate it and despise it. But some people like love that kind of thing. So you figure out, I think, like figuring out what you're good at and then leveraging the rest. But you have to be making enough money to be able to support to do that. So it's kind of like this teeter-totter kind of effect. But once you start making a little bit of money, then build a team who complements your strengths. That's what I would say is the biggest thing to really continue to grow.
You know, this is something funny that happened when I came back to my country after being months in Europe, is that in Europe, I was surrounded by all these people from the mastermind that we're part of. And something that I really liked, ended up liking a lot, is that, as you say, you as an entrepreneur is like putting a magnifying glass upon your own faults. And if you are on a really good supportive group, they are going to be able to point you at these faults. And the thing is that after months of living and being surrounded with this group of friends, every time I was making a mistake, like somebody will point it out, I will maybe tell a problem, and they will be able to quickly say, okay, you're fucking it up here. And I understood, I deeply understood that it wasn't just like saying, oh, this is your fault, and just to make you feel bad, right? Or pointed the fault at you, but that they were doing it because that was an area that was under my control. That this, and because this was upon my control, I could do something about it. And then I came back to my country, and I was so used to this method of communication that when somebody came to me and started talking to me about a problem, I would go and point that out where they were fucking it up. Again, from that place where I was just trying to point out, okay, this is something you control. You can use this to improve things, but they will take it up from the point of, he's judging me. And that created a lot of problems when I came back, because people were not used to me. Like they were used to talk about problems, just to talk about their feelings and feel good and vent a little bit about their problems. They were not looking for a solution. And I was here like, you're fucking it up here. So they didn't like that at all. And that, oh yeah, I'm not back with my friends, with my entrepreneur friends anymore. I should kind of regulate this a bit. But yeah, this is something that brought this up that I really like that you touched.
Yeah, it's so dramatic. It makes such a huge difference. It really does. And so you have to be very selective, I think, about who you let into your life. you know, and let to align with your goals, you know, and what you want to create and what you want to do, and you know, I guess it depends what your mission is, you know, like I've, you know, I'm a very, like, I've got a mission that I want to create, and that's like what I'm gonna do, you know, so it's like, so you know, being selective about that, it really makes all the world of difference. Yeah, I found like there's some people that I just couldn't. These weren't good for me, so you just have to kind of design your life in a way that is going to support you.
And now that you're traveling a lot, how do you deal with this area of trying to put together like kind of a group of people who support you? I think we kind of have an advantage for when it comes to other people, because we can go to this group in Facebook, which is hundreds of people in many different cities around the world, so we can just go into this group and say, hey, I'm going to be here, who wants to hit it up, and there is always about a couple of people saying, hey, I live here, let's meet up, or hey, I'm traveling here as well, so let's meet up. I think that's kind of an advantage that we have, but apart from that, have you been able to handle this, because traveling a lot is difficult to build a very close group of people.
Yeah, you are absolutely right, Rodrigo. You really hit it on the head there, and it is quite difficult. I was, it's quite difficult when you are traveling, and I honestly have to say, my girlfriend right now is a huge asset in supporting me. And she's traveling with me, so like I'm very grateful to have that support. But yeah, because it can be quite difficult. And what I found is, because I've been doing this for a long time. You know, I was living in Cape Town before. I've lived a lot of places, and I would attend meetup groups, and I would do these things, and it's very difficult, honestly, to find people that are the right match. I mean, a lot of what I ran into was when I would attend these meetup groups. I would attend meetup groups and stuff, and I think a lot of people are so afraid to be vulnerable, to like actually express what's really going on. They would like pretend that they like are this, you know, they have everything figured out, and then it would create this kind of like almost like a competition where you would like be like trying to like one up each other. And I don't like that personally at all. And it gives me anxiety, to tell you the truth. Those kind of like, you just have to be very selective. And when you find somebody like, you know, who you kind of vibe with, and you feel there's, you gotta kind of latch on necessarily, but just you have to nurture that relationship, you know, and maybe you need to stop traveling, or maybe you need to, you know, just, to really, because it makes a world of difference, honestly. Like if you had to stop traveling, like there's so many great places in this world you can live, honestly. Like I like life is good. As long as you have a little bit of money, like life is good, you know, wherever you're at. I guess I've never been to El Salvador, so I can't really speak for that, but I've lived a few places and I'm quite happy. And I would honestly move to have that good support group. I would say it's more important than the travel. If you want to succeed, because it's such a critical area.
Yeah, definitely. And I also experienced that as well. I remember discovering that I really like events, business events that are more about building something. Like I really like tech guys because they are very focused on trying to build something. But then I went into London to this event that was called Expert Secrets or something like that. And the thing is that this event was full of people who all wanted to be like kind of the business influencers, like the business guru. And I could feel like I could almost smell the ego, as you say, yeah. That this vibe that I have to, like, I have everything figured out. And when you put too many of those people into just one event, I was like, I'm not kind of vibing here. I went to that event because Gary Vaynerchuk was going to be there, and a couple of guys that I wanted to see. Ryan Dice was one of them, but man, like, everybody was like, oh, look at me, I'm this guru, and I'm this guru, and I'm this guru. It's like, the fuck is this? So I realized that I really didn't like this kind of ambient where of entrepreneurs who are gurus trying to teach other people how to be entrepreneurs. I definitely like more people who, like you, were into building businesses that were services to other businesses, or people in tech who are trying to create something, a new product, a new technology or something like that. That kind of vibe I really like, of trying to build something. But when it is around, look at me, I'm the successful guy, like the personal branding area, that didn't vibe with me too much, let's say.
It's interesting, and you can just tell instantly. And I don't know about you, but for me, like, I get a feeling in my stomach. Like, I literally, like, I get, like, I'll sometimes go into a room and I'll
start over here, like,
yeah, I just instantly feel this kind of discomfort. And I'm not religious per se, but I'm quite spiritual, and I studied a lot on this. And it's like, the more that we can listen to our bodies, the more that we can, like, it's trying to tell us something. And so if something feels uncomfortable, like, there's something there to be told. And so I started to, like, see these things, and, like, and it's, and I realized, like, it's cool, like, that's their path, and that's, and like, and honestly, like, I think that what happens is people are just so afraid. They're so afraid that they, you know, they can't actually be vulnerable. It's like a fear thing. And so it's like, but honestly, I don't want to be around those people either. So it's like, you know, I wish you the best, you know, and it's cool, and I'm happy for you and everything, but, like, you're not the guy who I'm going to call, you know, when I want to talk to my friend or talk about my challenge or help him grow, you know what I mean? So, yeah, this is such an interesting topic.
Yeah, definitely. I feel you right there. It's like, I'm really, on that end, like, I'm kind of really simple, like, point A, point B, and a direct line from one of them to the other. That's the kind of philosophy that I like to take. It's like, build something, have a vision, go for it, do not make things harder than they should be. And that thing is, that principle, do not make things harder than they should be, because they are already difficult enough to be adding unnecessary things to it. And I just have seen, and I had experience in the past of people who were trying to play that ego game. And I see that created so many unnecessary problems, not only in the physical world, but as well in the mental world, as you say, in the spiritual realm as well. I don't like to be too much identified with an image inside my head, at least. I can use it as a logistical end to business, but I do not like to be very tied to let's say the image of the entrepreneur or something else. That is not to my liking, let's say. And yeah. Is there any lesson that you would like to give to the people that we haven't talked into this interview yet?
I don't. I'm just going to recap on how much I think it's important to make sure you get the right market to message match, because that was an area that had given me challenges before. And so I would just reiterate that if you're having a hard time with selling your product, it could be that the market to message match, and it might not be the specific product that you sell that you need to market. It might be something similar, might be something that's related to it. So if you sell animated videos, maybe for, like, I'm not sure your clientele per se, but let's say the clientele is animated videos to maybe a small business owner, for example. If you were to market to, like, this is, if you were to market them to buy an animated video, they might not even know what they need one. But if you market to them, you know, here's a free guide on how to, you know, increase your sales by, you know, how to increase your sales, then they're going to download the guide. And then once they download the guide, then you educate them on animated videos and this process, and then you sell them. And once you can get that right, then it's like leads are just coming. They just come. I mean, life is a lot easier when you have that reoccurring, like you can breathe easier. Like you're just like, it's funny because like, at least for me, I'd have all these ideas in my head. Oh, this is the best product. This product, oh, everyone's gonna buy this. Oh, they're gonna buy this. Like, oh yeah, they're gonna buy it. But then when I test it, nah, it doesn't work. And then I get this new idea. Nah, like the data doesn't lie. You know, and so when you do this kind of method, or when you're testing it, then the data actually tells you what to do, and not your this is a great idea type thing. You know, and it's like whatever the results show would be. I guess the takeaway that I would hope to share with the audience is that, and again, focus on your strengths. You know, you don't have to do everything yourself. You can build a team, and there's creative ways to do it. If you're bootstrapping it, you can do a partnership. There's different ways you can do it. You don't have to have a lot of money. There's ways that you can really just do what you're good at.
Definitely.
What I would say, yeah.
Yeah, I also taken that, the messaging, to the point that I have created subdomains, so I can create landing page specific to the offer and to the target market. So that is something that I have done, because I have a main page where I have like kind of the general information. But in order as well to kind of keep separated the buying traffic and things like that, and to have the pixels and the tracking very separated from the rest, I have created subdomain pages that they can only access as unless you have the direct URL, and obviously through ads, so that way I can start testing that messaging app more directly. And yeah, I seen, even though when I was doing the direct mail campaigns, the cold email campaigns, and having these landing pages to show the clients that I'm trying to get, I can see the difference, how much they buy when you give something generic comparison to have something that is a spot on to what they are looking.
Yeah. Exactly. And that's exactly what you do, really. You just set up landing pages, and again, with whatever traffic source you use, I think Facebook is the easiest and the cheapest, but you can literally do it for $10 a day. I mean, and you can test, you know, each test is $10 a day, but you can run 5 tests at a time, and you can quickly test a lot of things very quickly and really get that dialed in.
Nice.
It well depends and, on it depends on your yep. depends on your business and your market and your target, a lot of things, but this is a pretty easy way to do it. Yeah, at least in my experience, what I do with my clients, it makes them happy when we get them leads.
Awesome. And if people want to find more about you, where can they do so?
Yeah, you guys can follow me on social media if you want, on Instagram. This is Spencer McMurtry, or my website, thesystemsmethod.com. And yeah, I hope we can, hope this benefits you in some way.
Awesome. And thanks a lot for being here and giving us your experience. I'm really grateful that you have come here, that you have accepted this interview, and for you to give us your time to talk about all the lessons that you have learned through your entrepreneurial path.
Yeah, Rodrigo, thanks for having me, and it's always great to catch up with you, and looking forward to seeing more podcasts to do.
Definitely. So this has been the last episode of Level Up. If you like it, please click the like button below, and also click the subscribe button and the bell. And if you're listening to us in the podcast, just subscribe to our podcast and you'll be notified when new episodes come up. Until next time.